Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and thank you, and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen, and over in studio is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Allen. Yes, my entourage and myself have arrived in Studio B. I understand we have an outstanding guest this morning from the powerful NAACP of Minneapolis. We want to get that absolutely correct and distinguish, if you will. We know the St. Paul NAACP, who just had an election and elected a new president. They are saying that they're on the move. But this is a outstanding piece of journalistic work by you, Mr. Allen. And can you indicate to us what our guests will be talking to us about this morning?
Well, Ms. Kayles Houston has been played a pivotal role, Mr. Edwards, from what I've seen, and I haven't talked to her in detail, but this is just the amount of information she puts out is really great and overwhelming, and it's something to pay attention to. And she is working on legislation to deal with the child welfare situation, the child protection. As a matter of fact, I even think she's working on that foster care piece that we've been seeing talked about for about the last 7-8 years. And so when we bring her on, we'll get into more detail than that. But I respect her as an activist just from what I see on social media and what she brings to the table as a focused professional and a nonprofit director. So this is, this is part of our Change Agent series, Mr. Edwards, where we bring individuals on in the Twin Cities that, have cut the mustard as far as we're concerned, and we are some harsh critics, as you know. But this is the person I think that will shine during this interview, and maybe we can help her by using our journalistic platform to push her message forward.
All right, let's bring her on. Let's get her aboard, and let's Let's get it started.
Okay. Well, I'd like to welcome to the show in our Change Agent series, Minneapolis NAACP's Kayles Houston. Ms. Houston, welcome to the program.
Kayles, good morning. And
Kayles,
thank you, Don.
Kayles, just call her Miss Houston.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Refer to her as Miss Houston. Okay.
I will do that for the rest of the show. I'm sorry, I'm very excited, Mr. Edwards, as you can tell.
No worries.
Ms. Houston, welcome to the show. We're happy to have you. I don't think I've told you this, but I have reached out to the president and vice president of the NAACP, and I know they have very busy travel and political schedules, so hopefully sometime we can get them on. But first of all, I'd like to welcome you to the show, and I know that you're currently working with some the Minneapolis NAACP, you're the chairperson of the Child Protection Committee. Can you kind of give us brief introduction and tell us what's going on with that?
Yes, sir. So I've been advocating for child welfare reform for about 5 or 6 years now. I went to the NAACP Minneapolis about 2 years ago to talk about the issue of the overrepresentation of African-American children in child welfare and the inequitable outcomes that result from that involvement. I propositioned the branch to start the Child Protection Committee to address the issue through policy and advocacy. As we all know, the NAACP is a powerful vehicle for change, and I wanted to really utilize that. And we started the Child Protection Committee, and I've been chairing it since that time.
Okay. With that said, so have you presented any legislation or anything that we should be aware of to this year's legislative session through a partner agency or maybe just through the NAACP? How's that process going?
Yes, sir. So I started Village Arms. It's a Christ-centered nonprofit that's dedicated to aiding and assisting African-American families impacted by child protection. And through my nonprofit, as well as the NAACP, I wrote legislation for an African-American Family Preservation Act. The bill was authored this session by Senator Hayden and Representative Moran. It's been doing quite well so far. We've been heard in the House Health and Human Services Committee, the Judiciary Committee, as well as Government Ops. It'll be moving on to Finance in the House next week. And we've gotten a commitment from that chair, Tina Liebling, that she's committed actually to seeing the bill pass. So I'm looking forward to that hearing next week. It hasn't gotten much movement in the Senate. We've had the initial hearing that we needed to have before the March 15th deadline in Health and Human Services, and it passed there, but it hasn't moved since that time.
Okay, have you presented the bill, if I may ask, Ms. Houston? Have you submitted the bill or brought the bill or talked to maybe like Republican Senator Eric Pratt or his counterpart and colleague, Republican Minnesota Senator Roger Chamberlain, who have been on this show several times in the past and are open to see anything? Have you shopped it over there at all yet?
I have not. I'm not as well connected with the Republican side. I've been really asking some of our allies and supporters to lead on that work there, but I would welcome any names and contacts of folks that are really interested in this issue, because the narrative has been that our Republican friends are not very interested in issues around inequities, and that's the reason that we haven't gotten a second hearing. So I will be open to anyone that, you know, is willing to talk about this and see this legislation move.
Okay, before I pass over to Mr. Edwards for some questions, I need to talk about what you just said. And I've heard this for the last 20 years. And as you might or might not know, I am a conservative. I don't drink the Kool-Aid of the Republican Party because black people are dying out here. And I know in some cases, black people are not on the top of the list for the right. I understand that. I'm clear on that. But regardless of that, in Minnesota, black people, black community members, black agencies have allies in Minnesota's Republican Party. The problem is that the narrative is a one-sided narrative. These are humans just like us. And Mr. Edwards and I had Senator Pratt and Senator Chamberlain here. Senator Chamberlain, who is getting legislation passed to make sure that no kid gets jammed up by the police for selling hot dogs in North Minneapolis ever again, was his brainchild. Okay, that was not the Democrats or the left, okay? Also, Roger Chamberlain just took a photo shot at the state capitol, a photo opportunity, with his new bill to make sure that parents have the choice to send their kids to a quality school. So if you're not getting an education in this school, in this area, you have a voucher or a path to make sure your kid gets the best education possible in Minnesota. That's not coming from the Democrats. The other senator, Senator Eric Pratt, he will fully listen to this. The thing he always tells me is that no one comes and talks to him. So after the show, Ms. Houston, I'm going to make sure I give you both of their cell phone numbers and names and email addresses, because you need to contact them and talk to these two guys. And Senator Pratt is the head of the powerful economic committee for the Senate. Go ahead.
Awesome. I was just going to say I would really appreciate that, because that has been the narrative. I can't say if it's true or not, but I know that I do need to do some legwork on the Republican side, and I would appreciate and welcome those names.
Yeah. I guarantee you'll get response, because I actually tagged them on our show today and then sent them a message behind the scenes that says, hey, you really need to come on and hear this young lady speak, because she's on to something. Mr. Edwards, let me pass it over to you, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. Allen and Ms. Houston again. Welcome. Khalif, welcome. But I'll refer to
you
as Ms. Houston.
That's
and
so
give us a little bit of background about yourself. We did not do that. As you can see, my associate, Mr. Allen, is fairness and balance as pertains to both Democrats and Republicans. I am a left, far to the left individual. I'm, you know, a left winger, black militant, and et cetera. I don't apologize for it. So I have fun with him with regards to that. But tell us a little bit more about yourself. Wow. Yeah, you came to us from where? Or did you grow up here in the Twin Cities? Like, give us a little background on yourself.
Yes, sir. So I'm originally from Michigan. I moved to Minnesota about 15 to 16 years ago. I thought I was going to come to – I'm out of town right now. I'm actually home in Michigan now, so excuse me if I mix it up. But I actually moved there thinking that I was just going to work for a bit and move back to Michigan, but God had another plan because I've been there ever since. And as I stated, I got started in child welfare reform about 5 to 6 years ago, and that was actually after serving for 5 years at Hennepin County Central Intake Shelter. So this was the first stop for children just removed from their parents. It was there that I saw at any given time 100% of the kids on the unit, the emergency shelter unit where I worked, would be African-American youth. And when they were with us, they were there. Yeah, they were with us for much longer periods of time than their Caucasian peers. A lot of them actually were back 3 to 4 times a year before just aging out of the system at age 18. So they essentially grew up with us. And I, even with my work now, with the policy and advocacy piece, I still see these same children that I met at about 13, 14 years old now in transitional living facilities are still connected in foster care to some degree. So it was just seeing that cycle, getting to know the parents and seeing that they really were not bad or abusive parents, but just those that really needed help with resources, connections.
They were just black.
Yeah, yep, exactly. Yeah. And that kind of lit a fire under me to head to the Capitol to start testifying and sitting in on some of the hearings and really just talking to anyone that would listen about what I was seeing occur.
Let me ask you this question, because I have a number of questions and we're going to keep you with us a while. We certainly appreciate your due diligence. And that you took the time although I'm not done what part of Michigan depends upon, but at, 9:30 or 10:30 in the morning, depending on where you're at in Michigan, that you would take the time and have the dedication and the commitment to spend a little time to familiarize the population here in the Twin Cities and across the United States. We are across the world, if you will. Now, one of the things I always do with people, that's cardinal rule with me, you said Michigan, but whereabouts in Michigan? Michigan is a big state with a lot of big cities. Where are you? Where was your original place of birth and education?
Yeah, so I'm from a really small city in Michigan, Saginaw.
Tell us where it's.
Yep,
oh, girl, come on! You just a little bit north of Flint, girl. I got friends and people out there, Saginaw. Yes, yes. Come on now. Yeah. Saginaw is about 86,000.
People usually don't know where it is.
I do, sugar, because I'm a historian. But let's continue on. Now, you're working on some things. Now, the president currently of the Minneapolis NAACP is who? What is her name?
Leslie Redman.
Redman, yes. Now, Ms. Redman, as I understand it, and really gives you some additional clout, has just taken on a position with the Attorney General of the state of Minnesota. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And that would be Keith Ellison, who is now the Attorney General. And people are expecting, I got to tell you now, Ms. Houston, people are expecting some big things with regards to this political network that is being put together. Now, let me ask you a question about a couple of your colleagues who should be out. Well, let me ask the question of facilitation, if you will, and we'll ask the name of Justin Terrell. Has he reached out to you? Has he been a part of the discussion? Have you sat down with him? Do you know who I'm talking about, Justin Terrell?
I absolutely do. Justin Terrell of the Council on Minnesotans of African Heritage and his legislative coordinator, Jasmine Carey, have been very helpful and supportive throughout this process. And this isn't the first go-round, so we introduced it last session, and it didn't move anywhere. So Justin was a help back then as well. He and I were running around trying to get folks to sign on in support of the bill, and they've really done the same this session
and just taken it up a notch. I'm glad to hear that. Now tell me if James Badu, who is I think the chairperson of the Social Justice Committee of the NAACP, has he been of any help? Justin, you already spoke on him, and now you know James Badu, correct?
I do know James Badu, and he's been one of the biggest supporters within the branch that I've had on this work.
Okay. Now, didn't I hear you a couple weeks ago? Weren't you on the Al Flowers program?
Yes, sir.
That was you. That's right. Your voice is distinct, and I thought I remembered you talking about this and laying that out, and I thought that you were doing a heck of a job promoting and trying to move this specific agenda. Now, I hope that you take my colleague, who you can tell is very passionate about the far right, if you will, take him up on his offer to you to put you in contact with the two senators that we just mentioned, who have been on this program in the last month and a half, if you will. Now, what is the ultimate goal of this quest that you're on? Just kind of walk us through it. Well, I mean, what is really your goal? Because I assume that it is a part of your passion. And so what are your expectations before this session of the legislature recesses?
Yes, sir. The goal, do you mean the goal of the bill?
Both the goal of the bill and your dedication to continue to press forward.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. So this is just the first step. I intend to work on policy as it relates to child protection indefinitely. I attempted to draft this legislation to at least start to lessen the number of our children that are unnecessarily placed in out-of-home care. That's the primary goal, but my overall goal is to not only address disparities, but to eradicate them within child welfare. There's small percentage. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Monica. Go ahead, my friend. Go ahead. It's important for our communities and the world to hear this. Go ahead.
Yeah, I like to keep it within context because when we talk about child protection, people just automatically assume that we're talking about bad and abusive parents, but there's a very small percentage of children that are removed for physical abuse, 9% actually, and
there
about 2% are removed for sexual abuse. Everything else is circumstantial.
For race. right.
It's
right.
Based on race-based.
And I appreciate you
based.
Doing that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm,
I appreciate
mm-hmm.
you. I don't want to cut you off, but I want to appreciate you laying out with great specificity the actual dominant numbers, if you will, that are causing this to happen, and it's been going on. Now, there was a gentleman by the name of Ed McDonald who used to be the head
yes.
of the Council on Black Minnesotans before it was, you know, written out of existence by some of our you know, legislators and et cetera. Mr. McDonald, my God, Don, what was it, 7-8 years ago that Mr. McDonald
yeah.
was really pressing this? And folks in the legislature, and I have to indicate, Ms. Houston, both Democrats and Republicans were giving him the same song and dance about what they were going to do. So it's good to see you come out of the mist, if you will, if it's, you know, not insulting to you. To walk that road once again because it is desperately needed. Now, you did not mention the name of Senator Bobby Joe Champion. Has he been an advocate? Have you been able to work with him? Because you seem to be having a problem, unfortunately, in the Senate. Senator Champion, is he working with you?
Yes, he is. And while he isn't the chief author in the Senate, he's supportive of the bill as well as the advocacy work. You know, he works in child protection, so we would actually see each other in court. So he has a passion around this issue as well because he witnesses the inequities firsthand, as do I.
There you
so,
go.
Yes,
and for our listening audience across the country, Senator Bobby Joe Champion is a legal practitioner. In other words, he is a licensed lawyer. And so that would be the reason that our guest this morning would be singing. You know, sometimes people get real confused when black folks are talking about, you know, having been in, quote unquote, the courtroom. People just equate that with the fact that we've got criminal problems. You know, we go and attend the courtrooms also to observe.
Good
and
point.
Oftentimes we serve as advocates, if you will, for our communities and et cetera. Now, is there anything
I was just going to say, I actually, about 4 years ago, started volunteering as a guardian ad litem in Hennepin so that I could have a voice in the courtroom on these cases. And then I took a full-time position as a cultural specialist guardian ad litem for Dakota County. So
right.
I'm working within the system,
okay.
But then outside as well. Yes, sir.
All right. All right. So you were down there in Dakota County with, what's his name, James Blackstrom, whoever, the county attorney down there. Again, you obviously have been gaining the necessary knowledge that is important to be an advocate. By the way, let's do this, because a lot of people fake, like they know. Explain to us in as many sentences as you desire, what is a guardian ad litem?
So a guardian ad litem in other states is called a friend of the court. And they're basically assigned to the cases in order to provide recommendations as to the best interests of the children. And it's really so that the court and the judge has a different perspective or a perspective outside of the social workers, which is really important. The issue that I have with the program is that oftentimes, instead of being an independent party, as we're called and required by statute to be, we act as an extension of the social services agency. So instead of really investigating the cases independently and bringing recommendations that are fresh and new and within our own perspective, we're just really kind of rubber stamping what the social services agency has already provided to the court and their perspective on the case and the family. So in that aspect, I don't think the program is as effective as it could be, but the intent of it is awesome, and that's why I wanted to become one.
Well, very good. Appreciate the clarification, because, as I said, a lot of people pretend that they understand what folks are saying, even when they use a Latin expression, guardian ad litem, an old Latin terminology from the old Latin testimony, and et cetera. Appreciate that, that kind of clarification. Is there anything at this point, as we wrap up, and we appreciate the time that you have taken to join us from northern Michigan? Well, you're not all the way up to that part between upper Michigan and Michigan. But the time that you've taken this morning to join us is appreciated greatly by us. Is there anything that I or my colleague, Mr. Allen, have forgotten or missed in asking you, or is there anything that you desire to lay onto the table of knowledge?
I absolutely do. So this legislation, it took me a long time. I spent a couple of months, actually longer than that, if we count both sessions, writing this, and it was in direct response to what I've seen in the courtroom, as well as the experience that our children and our families have once involved with child protection. So it will really work to provide a standard and a protocol for our families so that we aren't unnecessarily losing one of our losing our children when there's other options available. It would provide and really mandate that the county make active efforts to prevent out-of-home placement and implement in-home safety plans, as well as bring in community and familial support so that the burden does not always lie on the county. One thing that I need the community to do, our allies, our supporters, is to not only like and share the information on social media, but to contact their state reps and their senators in urging them, in an effort to urge them to pass the bill. Because once it's heard in this final committee, it'll have to be heard on the floor for a vote. And what we really want is for all of our elected officials to have heard from their constituents about the importance of this bill passing. This is a long-standing national issue. I'm hoping that we can do something here in Minnesota that can be used as a model in other states to address this issue, because our children are suffering. The counties set themselves up as adversaries against the parent, and sometimes the removal is a punishment or intended to be a punishment to the parent, but it's actually more of a punishment to the child. And I want us to really start to focus on the trauma that we're causing these children, and to employ alternatives when possible.
All right. Well spoken, well crafted, if you will, and hopefully it will become successful. Let me just say this while I still have you on the
phone. Can I share the bill numbers?
Oh, certainly. Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Yes, it's HF, so I sure will. So it's HF, House File 342, and SF, Senate File 730. And again, HF 342, SF 730. DHS and the county agencies have gone through it with the fine-tooth comb, as I'm sure you all would expect. Some edits have been made, but the meat and the intent of the bill remains. Otherwise, I wouldn't be on the phone with you speaking in support of it now.
All right. Let me just say this also, in that you are with us, if you will, from Michigan, that on behalf of some African Americans, some who are no longer with us, who have passed over to the other side, that they, on their behalf, I want to thank you for your passion and your commitment. First and foremost, Ms. Carol Ann White, who now resides in Kansas City, Missouri, former member of the Minneapolis Board of Education, longtime activist. Ms. Lorraine Smallard of Minneapolis, as number two, Mr. McDonald, that Mr. Allen and I have made a reference to, if you will. We, on behalf of them and others who, as we said, have passed to the other side as it pertains to life, that this is still a passion, this force is still being driven, and both of these individuals, former Representative Ray Pleasant, a Republican, like Mr. Allen, of suburban Minnesota, Hennepin County, and the late and beloved Senator Dr. Bob Lewis. Individuals who, young lady, before you got here, if you will, were fighting this battle, and that was, 40 years ago. So this has been a continuous battle, if you will. Some maintain that a former state representative by the name of Randolph Staton was the architect and et cetera. That is actually not accurate. I am a historian, and so I demand detail and specificity and accurateness, if you will. And so to the former, now deceased, Senator Robert Lewis, Bob Lewis, Dr. Lewis, if you will, and former state representative Ray Pleasant of Bloomington, Minnesota, I think that they would have a great appreciation of your passion. I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Let me do this in respect of my colleague, Mr. Allen. Do you have any questions, Mr. Allen, anything we've missed?
Well, I appreciate Ms. Houston calling in today. And, Mr. Allen, we've had someone holding for 13 minutes who I went and checked with this individual friend of the show that would like to ask a question. Would that be okay?
Let's do it. We have Ms. Houston with us. Let's do it. I think I can guess who the caller was. Go right ahead.
Caller, you're live on the air. What's your question or comment for Ms. Houston?
Oh, greetings. You know, I really want to say this is Mr. M, and I want to just commend that young lady, you know, for taking on this fight because, you know, I'm retired from Hennepin County Child Protection. I was the most tenured supervisor when I retired from there. And I was brought on by a man named Dr. Sanders, David Sanders, who ran that agency to perfection, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so after that, the only question I want to have, I don't want to, you know, be too lengthy.
Yes, let's get to the question. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't want to be too lengthy here, but I think what we need to do is educate the community on the rules of child protection and what it's about. Because I think if they knew how to navigate the system and they know when you get that knock on the door, there's no court involvement. you have the opportunity to do a voluntary case plan to get them out of your life. And so it ratchets up. It's like your family's in the queue now. And so what can we do to educate the community and the families? I mean, I would love to work with you guys. I volunteer. I have a nonprofit now. Actually, my sister and I, my sister is a Harvard graduate and a Columbia PhD, and she's a professor at Southfield at Oakland University. It's somewhere outside of Detroit. I think the young lady may know where that is. I think it's Rochester.
That's right.
Or
that's something. Right. That's right. Fairfield, probably. Fairdale. But go ahead. Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to know what we can do to educate the community. And like I say, I would love to volunteer my time, be a part of your boards. But what can we do to educate the community?
Now, let me just say on her behalf, because we've had her on now for a half hour, Em. And actually, that's what she's been doing, and she's been doing an excellent job.
Yes, sir. That's a great point. A large part of it is our families and just anyone outside of the child protection field not really understanding the process, and our parents don't know what their rights are or what to expect.
Yes.
So there is definitely a need for education around protocol, what to expect, what your rights are, so on and so forth. With this bill, there's actually a portion of the bill that will require the commissioner to establish RFPs and grants to African-American-led organizations so that we can start to implement some of the programs and services that we know our families need. In the meantime, I would love to connect with you. I'm going to share my email address before we end this call. I absolutely agree that that is a major need. And one of the reasons that this bill is so important is that we need additional services and programs in place specific to child protection for Black families.
I was still a supervisor there,
Hold it. Let's give us that information, Ms. Houston. That is so important. Go ahead.
If I was still a supervisor, I would have hired her.
We're trying to get this information, and we'll get back to you for a minute or so. Go ahead, Ms. Houston.
Yes, sir. So my email address is arms, A-R-M-S, open, O-P-E-N, at outlook.com.
All right. Could you repeat that again? Because probably you got to do that for human beings.
I sure will. It's arms open, so ARMSOPEN at outlook.com.
All right. Now I want to take this occasion, Ms. Houston, to thank you for being with us and spending a half hour of your important time. And Mr. Allen, I understand my colleague will be in contact with you, and we may have you back on at the end of the legislative session to talk about either the success or the continuation of this particular proposition. Again, I want to thank you, and may God bless you and continue to have his hand on your shoulder. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Ian. Do you have anything else?
Well, no, I just really, want to commend you guys for having the young lady on and for her expertise and her passion to really get into this area because, we've been, once these families, there's a call or you're in the queue. You're in the queue of child protection, and you have to realize that at the beginning it's voluntary services. And you can structure your plan. You can say what you need to do to keep your kids safe. And so our families now really, to me, are against the eight ball because in our communities they've closed a lot of our schools. You go to South Minneapolis, North Minneapolis, they've closed a lot of schools. They've closed a lot of things where kids could walk to a school and get educated and know that their community is there. You had people working at the schools that lived in the community. They worked in the lunchroom. They worked in the janitors. They worked. All these were parents. All their kids went there. And so they knew the friends, and so you had a whole community-type thing that's been taken away from us.
Okay. I want to thank
Richard Green. I know, Ron, I don't want to talk about that. But I just hope that people can understand the child protection you know, rules, that you have a voluntary plan, and until you go to court and that judge says that your kid is in need of protection and services, then you're under the court auspices. Then it's ratcheted up.
Right. All right, my brother, thank you, sir, for your time, and we appreciate it, and we, of course, we expect to hear from you again in the near future. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Allen, do we have any additional individuals holding or in the queue?
No, we
and
don't.
If not, what is your assessment?
Well, my assessment is Ms. Houston is very sharp. She knows what's happening, what's going on, and I appreciate, you know, her rigor in this matter. And I'm also going to reach out to her and tell her to I think I have a documentation from when Ed McDonald, when he was the executive director of the Council on Black Minnesotans before Carolyn Lane and Rena Moran tore that agency up. They wrote one hell of some legislation, you know, on this topic that I think will actually assist her in moving her agenda forward. And I'm hoping for her maximum success in this endeavor, and I appreciate her. I appreciate her having the guts and the tenacity to get on the air with us and have this conversation. Mr. Edwards, we have another caller.
Let's get it, Don. Let's get it in. All right.
A caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Ron and Don Tucker, I got a question here. You know, I think what the young lady's doing is remarkable. But I think without an economic base, you're just fighting windmills. If you have an economic base, you don't have the kinds of issues that she's speaking to. I think our communities throughout the country has been fighting symptoms of the problem without fighting the real problem. Nobody's going to achieve parity in the United States without an economic base. Like the kids trying to sell lemonade, and were rebuffed and stopped and had to pass a bill to allow that. Minneapolis has been very, very good at not allowing an economic base for the African-American community. And I think therein lies, in my judgment, lies the problem. I think what the young lady is doing is great, but I think it's a symptom. And you're treating the symptom and you're not treating the problem. And I think we need to restructure it. We need to restructure a lot of things. I hear talk about reparation. I'm not for reparation. I'm for restitution. And you need to look at restitution as a solution, not reparation. I don't like the term African Americans. We're American blacks. And I think we need to just restructure everything. As my parents told me, the first thing you do is call things by the proper name. I just think that it's admirable and it's magnanimous that people are doing the kind of social work, as I call it. But that hasn't solved the problems in my lifetime. And me and you, Ron, are over 70 years, and we've been through the civil rights issues and whole nine yards.
Tucker, I'm over 80, but go ahead.
I said over 70, Ron. I'm trying to give you a break.
I know. You do it your way, and I'll do mine. And I'm so happy. I'm so happy and proud to have made that 80th year and et cetera, because our life expectancy, and that you're talking a little bit about economic base, life expectancy, and by the way, life expectancy for Americans is on the decline. Isn't that interesting? With all the money that we spend and as much money as the pharmaceutical industry makes, that we are on the downside. The last 2 years has been a disaster. But go ahead. That's another.
Yeah, it's been a disaster for me. I just lost my neighbor, Bill Douglas, who you knew very well.
God bless him. I knew him very well.
And so I'm just saying that I listen to these issues, and I listen to the NAACP and many other social organizations, you know, which we all been a part of. My first wife worked for the Urban League when Whitney Young was the executive director. So, you know, I go way, way, way back. And so do you, Ron. And you know all these people. But I've always, and everybody that knows me know that I always thought that if you do not have an economic base, you're just spitting in the wind. And this city has done very, very well in preventing the American blacks from having an economic base.
Right.
We spent too much time trying to be respected versus being accepted versus being respected. And you're not respected when you're broke.
All right. All right. Thank you, brother. Thank you, Brother Tucker. And we'll be expecting to hear from you again at some point in time. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Allen, very profound. Let me have people waiting. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Caller, live on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you this morning for taking my call. I just had a question for the young lady that is with the child protection and doing the wonderful things that she is doing. My question is there legislation in any of these two bills that can address, people that have been falsely accused in the child protection area, and how they are able to get their name cleared? Because, for example, there is not a way at this point that you can have your case heard or even get to the point to having being able to clear your name. Just this week, I was helping an individual whose name has been dragged through the mud for over 15 years, and they're not able to clear their name on the false charges. There's not even a form that can get you to the place where your name, that they can even review it. So most
in other
people
words, so
that
the information could be expunged. Now, here's the thing. Senator Bobby Joe Champion, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it was highly touted, that he was doing expungement. Now, I would suggest, and certainly we will suggest to Ms. Houston, that she needs to go back and take a look at that part of the law that was proposed and passed by Senator Bobby Joe Champion to expunge all things pertaining to allegations of past grievances and et cetera. So the law is actually in place. It would be the Champion Amendment, Bobby Joe Champion, Senator Champion, because what you're talking in terms of is expunging.
Yes, and I'm also saying that what they're doing at the DHS, because that needs to be looked at too. Right now they're on the hot seat about many things. But one of the things that, because they are the ones that are responsible for reviewing all these things, I don't think they're doing a job that they're supposed to do. They're just letting these cases just go, and they're just keeping them in place. They're not reviewing them at all. And also I found out that they are actually putting people's names that are being putting people's names that they suspect, they're putting their names in all 50 states so that they're not able to even, find employment in any of those other states. And they're doing that from right here. I think it's atrocious that this is allowed to happen because the people haven't even had a chance to defend themselves.
Right. We appreciate that, and what we will do is that we will have my associate, Mr. Allen, who has primary contact with Ms. Houston and the NAACP, that we looked at. But to your specific question on the issue of expungement, which also within that are the issues of slander and et cetera. Now, we don't have the kind of slander laws here in the United States that they have, in, as an example, in Great Britain, where you pay a big dollar if you are convicted of slandering the good name of an individual. But your point, madam, is well made, well taken, and we will certainly pass that on. And I would suggest that maybe in a couple of weeks, give us a call and ask us for an update. That's the way we operate here on the Don and Ron program. I would encourage you to call us in a couple of weeks because we also will attempt to put you in contact with the NAACP's chair, which is the young lady that just took the time to speak to us from Saginaw, Michigan, if you will. We will certainly do that.
Okay.
Okay. There's one other thing that I wanted to say, that this is what, just this week I was told from over at DHS that in order for them to do anything, there has to be legislation that has to be passed. And so I would encourage them to look at the fact that they're over at DHS just saying that there has to be legislation in order for them to open up cases and to review them
That's interesting. I really question the authenticity of that statement. But, we'll make sure that that's passed on to the NAACP, because with their strong activism and et cetera and advocacy, that should be something that should be tested. And, in fact, you know what? That's a good question that you raised, madam, because the person that Mr. Allen and I will be working to encourage to answer that question is, guess who? The Attorney General of the State of Minnesota, the Honorable Keith Ellison.
Yeah. And that DHS.
It's going to be the Attorney General that reopens those cases. Yes.
Yeah, and that
I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that DHS, it really needs to be looked at with a fine-tooth comb.
They're doing stuff over there
that is so outrageous. It's very criminal what they're doing there.
But see, that's the responsibility of the legislature and the Attorney General of the state of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time in history, we have an African American as Attorney General. That is an excellent observation. We will work on that on this end. We encourage you to give us a call back in a couple of weeks, and
okay.
we can update you and the general public. I want to thank you for the call.
Thank you so much. All right. Bye-bye.
That is a great call that we just received, Mr. Allen. Any others holding? Because this is the kind of programming that we and Blog Radio find to be extremely important. This is desperately what we need. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Oh, yes. I agree 100%. We're looking at this stuff, and like I said, I'm going to make sure that I reach out to Ms. Houston and get her these numbers on the right side of the aisle, and some of these other callers that have called in. I've logged in their telephone numbers. I will make sure that they are passed along to Ms. Houston for further success and forward momentum in her mission that she's very passionate about.
Right. Let me do this also, Mr. Allen. And I meant to do it, but we were so appreciative of Ms. Houston taking the time to call us from Saginaw, Michigan. You know, we did not really ask her, and this is what we are recommending to her. If she's still listening, fine. If not, you will pass it on to her. You know, we didn't ask the question about what kind of support she is getting from the NAACP State Con and the National NAACP, including the NAACP's National Board of Directors. And the reason to our listening audience that I'm doing this is that my good friend and colleague, Mr. Allen, is a lifetime member of the NAACP. And, you know, we were almost remiss in not encouraging Ms. Houston and her colleagues to bring the, first of all, I'd like to see, Don, you and I know the inside and out of this. I'd like to see them bring whoever the current director of national branches of the NAACP, I'd like to see them bring them to town for the next regional meeting of the NAACP of the state conference, which I think is going to be in April. Because wherever they may be, I would encourage us to jump in the car and drive up and sit in on the meeting. You know, you're a life member of the NAACP.
I would encourage that
we convey this to Ms. Houston and that we get an update from her on what is the support from the national NAACP for starting with the state conference here in Minnesota. And then the national board and the office of the director of branches of the NAACP, because they are presenting themselves as a powerful organization, very powerful. In fact, Ms. Houston even used that term. And I'd really like to see them do this, particularly in light of this last caller who talked about the DHS. which is a disaster as it pertains to the safety and the protection of African Americans. By the way, I don't buy into that BS about that they can't reopen a case. The courts, by law and constitution, reopen any case they want if you know how to petition, right, Ms. Fallon? If you know how to petition,
exactly.
The court, that's what you have to do. And the NAACP has a history of being able to initiate litigation, if you will. And I got to tell you, that's going to be one of our drumbeats. I don't want to be a racist, but one of our drumbeats over the next couple of months, my brother. Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah.
Let's get it done.
Yeah,
I want to see those files opened up. Yes, sir. But go ahead. What do you got, Mr. Al?
No, I'm just looking around. You know that there was a story in the Star Tribune came out this week, Mr. Edwards, not going to change gears, about the use of fentanyl and the increases in deaths in Black Americans, and especially in Minnesota. And we know from those from Northside and the homeless shelters that people are overdosing at incredible rates, and some people in the white community are overdosing. And there's always seems. I guess my point is that I'm trying to make, there always is a race disparity when it comes to something disastrous, you know, in the United States.
Mr. Allen, if I could indulge you and ask you to hold, because you're absolutely on point, and I need to tell this story, because the mother of this deceased African-American was on my television program a couple of weeks ago and told a horrifying story about the indifference, the outrageous indifference of the Minneapolis Police Department in the death on November 19th of 2018 in North Minneapolis, in fact, right behind the Elks Rest there on Plymouth. A detective of the homicide unit, a Mexican, if you will, I have to put it like that, because he was so outrageous talking to this African-American mother. She asked him, what were they doing in investigating the death of her son, who was given in what is called, you know, a cocktail. He was given fentanyl, which the individual preparing it knew would kill it, right? And do you know that this homicide detective, this Mexican, told this Black mother, this African American mother, who has lost her son, one of her four children, all adults, he told her, "We're not doing anything on the case." Said the case is closed. This woman, and let me say this on behalf of Ms. Ava Santafred of Minneapolis, Minnesota, African-American mother, she has sent three letters to the mayor of our beloved city, if you will. Maybe we can get a representative of the mayor to talk to us next week or the following week about, you know, what kind of effort is any. She sent three letters in a period of 3 months, talking in terms of the tragedy that confronted her family and death threats and et cetera. Do you know that the mayor of the city of Minneapolis, who's Jewish, by the way, do you know they have refused to even answer her quest for justice? And I'm so glad, Ms. Fallon, you have to bring that up. And this is in the case of the death of the son, Ava Santafred, if you will. And a detective in the Minneapolis homicide unit told this mother just yesterday, we could script this better if it was being written and scripted in Hollywood. This person told her, and his assistant is the wife. She's the other sergeant on the case, is the wife of the assistant chief of the Minneapolis Police Department. And our Jolts. They told this woman yesterday that the case, we're not working on the case. We have no interest in the case. So, Ben, your point, sir, is well made, Don. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Had to tell it. You heard it here first on the Don and Ron program. Go ahead, sir.
And you know, I've been kind of reviewing and watching, you know, on social media some things that are happening as far as, you know, people at the state legislature presenting bills and gimmicks, as I call them. And this young lady that was on the air today is real. She's doing what she needs to do. And, you know, those questions that you have, Mr. Edwards, about what's going on in disparities and what Mr. Tucker says, I think that we do need to stop and look and see what's happening. Because
yes,
if
sir.
We don't have money, we're not respected. If there's no economic base, we're not respected. And there's too many disparities that right now a three-year-old could close his or her eye and point in
like
a direction.
Like Thor construction.
You,
like Thor construction. Don.
Yeah,
Thor
yeah
construction.
Like Thor, yeah. Yeah. You point and you see some disparities in the black community. And you just brung it up, a perfect point. I was going to get to that. The Thor construction has been off the radar. I know they're going through some things, but this was less than a year ago, Mr. Edwards. This was celebrated as the largest black-owned construction firm in the world and is headquartered, moving in North Minneapolis. It's going to bring a surge of economic development. And if you think about it, over the last 10 years, we've heard these stories from anywhere from the Northside Achievement Zone to the Empowerment Zone money to West Broadway Business Area Coalition to NEON to all these different groups. And Emerge, let me not forget Emerge, that did receive or had a substantial amount of pivot-changing money that never made it to the street. So, therefore, the disparity remains. This disparity remains. And so we have to address that. And we can't worry about political parties or affiliations or who's doing this and who's doing that because we're smart enough to know, look around, and already know who's in charge and who's been doing this for the last 10 years. And I'm not even pointing any fingers because it's common sense who's running things politically for the black community. And I think that as black people in Minnesota, we should question those people. We should question their policies, question their processes, because we're not being helped and we talk about the same damn thing year after year after year. So... And
well, your point is well made, my colleague. Your point is well made. It's the reason that I have to bring up the Thor construction. My God, it was just September of last year that many of the powerful of the African American community sat on the roof of the world headquarters of Thor Construction, looking out over North Minneapolis and all that quote unquote it represents, good or bad, evil. Are positive and et cetera, and we're toasting and drinking sparkling water and champagne and et cetera, and talking in terms of happy days are here again. You know, that's the song of the South, if you will, that they used to have the colors, the darkies, as they called them, to sing on the plantation to Massa in the late evening hours as he sat on the porch looking out over his plantation. Ooh, and you and I both were approached and had numerous people tell us what a great venture this was at this great world headquarters, at this, what is it, a five-story building that was going to bring a level of economic prosperity and et cetera. In fact, we're hearing that now from Councilmember Cunningham and others. And Robbie Norman, former chief executive officer of Oak Store Construction, we're talking about the Upper Mississippi development project, which we're going to have to keep our eye on behalf of our community, Don, because they're talking about getting some more money. But what happened, they ran into a hurricane, a cyclone, in the form of Vice President Jenkins of the Minneapolis City Council, who said, wait up. You know, you can't continue to lose $40 million and think you're going to come back in here and get some more money from the city. Because, by the way, Thor Construction, that building up there, that's owned by Sunrise Bank and the city of Minneapolis. Look out now, Don. We wasn't supposed to tell that, were we?
No, we wasn't supposed to say nothing. We wasn't supposed to say nothing. Well, we have under a minute, 90 seconds left, Mr. Edwards. Is there anything you'd like to say?
Look, James Brown, somebody, take us home, man. Take us home. Good program.
Yeah, come on with it, James.
Good playing. Yeah, right. My main man.
Yeah. We'll be back next week.
All right.
My main man.